Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Censored. I'm Aoife Vertnagh.
And I'm Lloyd Maeve Houston.
And we are talking about another film from the 60s, Rosemary's Baby. And a very quick but essential content note, Rosemary's Baby is directed by Roman Polanski, who I'm sure most of you know is notorious for his criminal past.
Yeah, and for being a massive piece of shit. let's be honest. There's the sort of, it's a double content note almost. The film itself deals with a rape. So we will be talking about a pregnancy arising from that and issues of various forms of coercive control that are dramatised in the film. And then you have super added on top of that the fact that it's directed by an abuser of a minor. So I hope it goes without saying that in discussing the film, we are not sanctioning Polanski in any way. But also, if for any reason as a listener any of this sounds unpalatable or hard going, completely understand the decision to stay away from it.
Absolutely, because some of what's in the heart of this film is like, it's so fucking disturbing, but the way that it's filmed is much more ambivalent than just deeply magnetically disturbing. I found myself sort of going, so this is, yes, a horror, but also not a horror. And I think that's something we should kind of talk about. Like, there's a lot of suspense, but certainly I wasn't afraid in the way I expected to be watching a horror film.
Yeah, there's a sort of creeping dread that intensifies in places. Like, there are moments where it's really quite skin crawly, but more often than not, there's a quite deliberately surreal and dreamlike quality to a great deal of it. And I mean, in a way that I hope isn't reductive in terms of your perspective on it, something as someone who has not borne a child, I would be very interested to hear from you who has, is to what extent it seems to evoke or attempt to simulate the condition of pregnancy and the ways in which your perceptions and experiences are altered by that state in and of itself, but also the way that you become this weird object of like communal investment and control, and everyone seems to feel that they have rights on you and on the bump and on how you're looking after yourself and the gestating child and things like that. But I feel like at least part of what it's kind of going for is the sort of derangement out of your previous perspective on the world that occurs within that. Because, I mean, yeah, my kind of backdoor thesis on the film is that as much as it's notionally about occultism and whatever, it's mainly just about, like, pregnancy being, like, fucking terrifying and weird as a condition.
I mean, that was exactly what I took from it as a one sentence. I was like, I don't think this is about witchcraft at all. I think this is about pregnancy. And much of what Rosemary, who, spoiler, is pregnant with the Antichrist, goes through, I was like, I mean, fair. Like, she's not sleeping, she's losing weight, she looks like shit. People are like, oh, you look bad. And she's like, really? You know, I'm like, yes, this does happen. Not to everybody, not all of the time, but it is absolutely normal in pregnancy, because one of the things that fascinates me about pregnancy is how in the medical context, they're increasingly conceptualizing the fetus as a parasite because it hijacks the blood supply and the nutrient supply, directs it all towards itself, and like a parasite, it can kill the host by virtue of existing, which apparently is unusual in mammalian pregnancies. So you can die from being pregnant, and then you can die from the birth. So, yeah, I mean, I was really, it's something I think about a lot, about how pregnancy is both a communal and an individual experience, and how people embark on it not really knowing where the boundaries are and having to navigate how difficult it is when, you know, it's not just you anymore. And even when people are willingly pregnant, that's a really weird place to be because it's always been you. And suddenly it's not you. And I think Rosemary is shown navigating that in a way that lots of pregnant women do, regardless of whether it's the fucking Antichrist. Like, you know, like that seems irrelevant almost to the pregnancy. That seems more relevant to the conception and the birth than the pregnancy part. And I think maybe you could like bring in the occult in the conception and in the birth, but the pregnancy part, I was like, I don't know if I'm supposed to be scared by this because I'm not. I feel
this just feels like relatable content.
Yeah, that was it. That was interesting because that's a very long part of the film, that difficult first trimester.
Yeah, right, because it's something that, I mean, you never fully forget it, but almost experientially watching it, you can imagine a version of this film where if you didn't have the sequence where you saw the conception, where it'd be much more ambiguous. Like, is this woman just experiencing sort of prepartum psychosis and becoming convinced that everyone around her is out to get her and just actually, you know, receiving like shitty but not unrepresentative gynecological care from a paternalistic old man and a self-interested husband? And, you know, if you didn't know that this was the film it is... Yeah, it becomes a very different sort of document of pregnancy. And then there's a, you know, there's that kind of moment where she finally has a party where she's like, look, it's a very strange kind of party. It's under 60s only. None of your, you know, because by this point she's regarding her husband with suspicion. You know, none of your old friends can come. Like, it's just my friends. And she winds up in the kitchen with just female friends of hers and like, breaks down, and they like bar the door to your husband and talk it through, and like, you need to get a second opinion. This shouldn't be happening. You shouldn't be in this much pain. This is all nonsense. And again, you know, with all caveats about not wanting to credit Roman Polanski of all people with making a feminist film, it is an interesting component of the text. Like, it's what, to my perspective, which again, I acknowledge the limitations of, seems like a kind of oddly insightful look at the more uncomfortable aspects of being pregnant.
I really liked how that sense of Rosemary as alone is explored in the context of her pregnancy. Like, she appears to be very isolated. Like, she doesn't have a job. She seems to spend her time making curtains and then not going out and not meeting people for coffee. And so that party is her opportunity, and also her rebellion against the consultant who said to her, don't ask other women. Every pregnancy is different. Don't be listening. Don't read books. And, you know, in a way it's true. Yes, every pregnancy is different. But that doesn't mean that you can't get support, information and solace from other people who will say things like, oh, yeah, that's the stretch marks. You know, that's okay. Or, okay, you mean ripping pain through your insides? No, that's not one I've heard of before. And maybe you should consider asking someone about it. And I thought that is a fascinating way of conceptualizing pregnancy as a group effort as well for women who are asking other women who've been there and are like, did anything like that happen to you? And now that we have the internet and we have forums and groups and pages and boards, like, that is how people find networks of support now. It's huge because it is quite difficult to discuss these things just with maybe your sisters, or, you know, there can be gaps. And she seems to be, even though she's from a big family, she's cut off from her biological family. They don't live in the same state. Although she thinks about them, they're not part of her support group. So yeah, it is an oddly feminist text within the film. I will say that according to the author of the book, it's an incredibly faithful adaptation of his work.
Credit to Ira Levan, who also wrote The Stepford Wives, so does have good stock in feminist critique circles, I guess.
Yeah, I think it is really to his credit that we get this really interesting exploration. And he was really impressed with how the film turned out. He was like, oh, I thought they'd change loads of it. Great. It's exactly what I want.
Well, I think they'd optioned this. Apparently, they'd optioned the rights for it even before the book had been published. Like, they sort of knew they were onto something with this.
And the book, the novel, I was convinced that would have been banned. But I went and I had a look and I couldn't find it. And I think that could be a coincidence of timing, that 1967 is when the Censorship of Publications Act is considerably overhauled and there's a big reduction in the number of texts that are censored, especially fiction.
Yes.
So
yeah, yeah.
I think it's quite possible it came out at a time where the government was rowing back from their previous severe censorship. So that might explain why the book isn't on the list, but this film was banned by the censor who saw it.
I'm not shocked, I'll be honest.
No.
I mean, where to start, right?
Can we talk about the Pope bits?
Yeah. So, yeah, a pair of figures we haven't really discussed at all, but who are absolutely, in some ways, like, for my money, they're the heroes of the film, are the Cassavetes, the neighbours next door, who are an absolute scream.
They are. When they walked in the door, the loudest, most extra people, and I was like, wow, these are amazing.
The wife talking like this, oh, you'll be all right, oh no, this, the girl we were looking after, she threw herself out the window, oh no, what a hardship. Would you like some creme mousse? There's too much creme de cacao in it.
Just like,
they are like a New York stereotype beyond words, but just so brilliant that you're like, this is what I want from New York.
Completely. And especially the wife is wonderfully over made up, huge makeup job, and this very intense physicality and puppet like almost performance. It's a disarmingly funny film in places.
Yes, yeah, it's one of those ones where you're like, I'm laughing at the Satanists who are evil, manipulative, controlling people, but they're also really quite attractive and fun, and I wouldn't mind having dinner with them.
Right? They seem like quite charming neighbours in a lot of ways. I mean, well, there's just that, there's that moment after it's all been revealed, right? After, you know, Rosemary has, again, we're doing our thing where we haven't summarised it very well. Basically, you know, it turns out, the husband has formed a kind of unholy pact with the Satanists next door, who have lived in this building back to the 1890s and are very much looped into that Order of the Golden Dawn, theosophist, sort of Aleister Crowley kind of milieu. And they've been trying to kind of conjure Satan for a long time, it seems. So he makes a pact with them that if they will help advance his kind of failing acting career, they can have Rosemary and she will bear the child. And there's a bit of a misdirect where you're meant to think that the child's just going to be used in some kind of ritual sacrifice, but actually it turns out to be the conception of the Antichrist. And so she makes a break for it, attempts to sort of escape, is recaptured, goes into labor, bears the child. They then try to convince her that the child was stillborn, but she hears a baby crying, and eventually she goes through to where they're having their rather sedate kind of tear, like, drinks meeting and gathering to welcome the Antichrist into the world.
like a baptism party. Like, it looks like we've all just come back from christening and we're just sitting around aimlessly looking at each other going, well, that was nice.
But centered around this fabulously overblown and gothic kind of crib that's all decked out in black crepe with an inverted crucifix hanging over it. And we never see, you never see the baby. You know, she's like, what's wrong with the ties? You know, there's the very famous sequence where it's all revealed. And, you know, she doesn't, you don't see the child, but you see her reaction to it. And it's kind of this horror all struggling. And then everybody starts screaming, Hail Satan. Which, again, another thing that's likely to irritate the Irish censor is just an old man being like, Hail Satan! Hail Satan! He is Adrian! You know, but there's a beautiful moment where he's just like, look, just look after the child, Rosemary. You don't have to join. Just look after the child.
Yeah.
You don't have to join is the funniest line in anything I've seen in a long time. It's like, look, you know, you don't have to become a member of the government. Look, just look after the child.
Yeah, you don't have to be a believer. We're not asking for faith or blood sacrifice on your part. Just do your job, and, you know?
And the reason I find that so funny is that even though she's like, clearly kind of instrumentally involved in it, Minnie Castevet, like the wife, does feel like she kind of is half in, half out of the organization. Like, she mainly does seem to be there more for like the gossip and the sort of, you know, like just keeping busy rather
Satanism at the coffee morning rather than Satanism at the sacrifice.
It's got a very sort of like, you know, satanic WI energy for her, you know. Yeah, just, oh, it's such a pure delight, like that.
It's, and like the use of colour throughout the film, the way that they, especially they use pink to make these colour pops at the beginning, and then red, and like so much of the palette was great fun.
It's lurid, it's a lurid kind of film. And I mean, again, famously, like, Polanski loves his heavily saturated sort of, you know, his Macbeth is all deep, like, you know, so much blood, there's so much red and black. And this is, yeah, very similarly sort of. And again, and the way that that's all bound up with, like, the interior redecoration sort of aspects of it as well.
Yeah, this blank canvas, they paint all the mahogany white, you know, which is very trendy. And it all looks beautiful. But yes, we have to talk about the Pope. Or is it the Pope appearing at the conception satanic mass horror moment?
Well, so the Pope first surfaces in the first dinner that they have with their neighbours, right? So they sort of, out of politeness, Rosemary is like, oh, you know, I said we would have dinner with them. And the husband's initially like, oh, God, do we have to? And then over dinner, the kind of elder patriarch is, you know, regaling the husband and kind of wooing him with like stories of the old theatrical world and like Henry Irving and people. But then they get onto the Pope, and the Pope delaying his visit because the newspapers are on strike, and kind of being like, well, that's showbiz. And it's like, ho, 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 ho. And then they go off on one, like poking fun at, you know, and all religions just being these, you know, sort of gaudy exercises in publicity. And, you know, it's the first sign that like something's, or it's notionally meant to be the first sign that something's amiss with these guys. And Rosemary's made uncomfortable because she's a good Catholic, or at least was raised Catholic. And, but yeah, the Pope comes in for a fair bashing and then, yeah, appears to absolve Rosemary in the midst of this, yeah, satanic rape.
I mean, there were just those moments with her Catholic background, because she was raised Catholic. I didn't really know quite what to make of some of them, that they would just kind of appear in dream sequences a lot of the time, not just the drug-induced dreams, but just her normal dreams, where she would have dreams about the nuns.
Yeah, there was a dream about windows being
a window, and
and she told someone something. And
yeah, I didn't understand that at all. I was like, is this, what is this about? I don't get it.
My instinct is that it's almost kind of like psychological sort of red herring, like maybe we're meant to view Rosemary as somewhat unreliable because actually her psyche has been kind of contaminated by this Catholic sense of guilt and shame around the pregnancy, that means that she's more apt to perceive a conspiracy around her than another person might be. Which I think is that's something that, A, obviously the film derives a lot of its sort of juice from in terms of the horror, right? Like, this sense of an ancient evil breaking out anew amid, you know, sleek, modern, cosmopolitan New York, you know, 1960s American life. But also as a kind of tussle between, like, old and new ways, or old and modern ways of handling birth, conception, pregnancy, fertility, etc., right? You know, she, like Rosemary, wants a hospital birth with the modern gynecologist. And then the cast of vets are pushing her toward herbal remedies. And this is partly on my mind because I've been like working on the 18th century lately. But, you know, it's like the kind of emergence of the man midwife and the kind of medicalized birth versus, you know, the sort of traditional wise woman or witch. You know, there's some kind of standoff in the film between old ways of handling pregnancy and birth versus the new modern medicalized.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Is one. Although ultimately, obviously, as Rosemary finds out to her horror, the secret thread that unites both becomes patriarchy and the way that, you know, her nice modern gynecologist seems to be sort of on board with what she's saying until she mentions her current gynecologist and he's like, oh, no, you're asking me to go against another medical man. No, I shan't.
Yeah, that part where Rosemary runs away and then she appeals to Dr. Hill, who's the first gynecologist she went to see, who she dumped on the advice of her satanic neighbours. And, you know, he's listening to her and then he gets the crazy pregnant lady expression where he's like, oh, yeah, this is just a crazy pregnant person. So he calls her current gynecologist. And I was thinking, I'm pretty sure that would happen now. Like, if you went to complain to a medical professional about the current one you're seeing, they would ring that person.
Yeah.
It is exact. Now, they may not, you know, give them carte blanche to come and take you away and do what you like, but...
Yeah. We're just going to sedate you and carry you off now.
Yeah. And that sense of, like, where she is... She says, I know this sounds crazy. And that's what every patient has to say in order to sort of take the sting out of what might be perceived as madness. It's like, look, I know it sounds mad, but I'm actually not mad. And that is like, oh, it's such a heartbreaking line.
Yeah. Well, and again, you know, it certainly corresponds with many, many reported experiences I've heard from, you know, friends about interactions with particularly male gynecologists. Like, not obviously none of them have had to convince anyone that they're at the center of a, you know, Satanist witch kind of ring, but you know, just trying to have your sense of what's happening with you and your body taken seriously within that sort of system is, you know, an exhausting struggle at the best of times. So again, it's as we kind of keep saying, it's like, yeah, it's, you know, it's sort of a film about witchcraft, but mostly a film about the nightmares of pregnancy, or, you know, of navigating being pregnant.
It's interesting how Rosemary is, in many ways, the ideal model pregnant patient, that she is so meek and so happy to be pregnant, and so, like... perfect as a patient. You know, she just goes and she sits down and she listens and she nods and she takes all the supplements and she never asks any questions. And it's really about her rebellion in her later pregnancy, when of course she is no longer as sick as she was. I mean, the first part of her pregnancy is horrific. You know, she looks like death.
It is a quiet testament to the powers of well-deployed screen makeup, right? Like, I mean, Mia Farrow is an interesting and shrewd casting choice in this regard, I suppose, in that obviously she's very small framed, she's very slight. She starts the film with, you know, shoulder length hair and looking petite, but like healthy and sort of radiant and happy. And then midway through gets a kind of like pixie cut, you know, sort of Jean Seberg-ish hair, which kind of, which interestingly, I think really infantilizes her, right? Like it makes her look cool and it's, you know, it's an iconic sort of look, but it does make her look like a little boy, sort of.
Yeah, and in the context of the clothes she's wearing, it somehow makes her very childlike.
Yeah.
Like if she was wearing something else, she would look hip and cutting edge, which is what her husband thinks the haircut is, like, shocking.
Yeah.
He's deeply upset by
everyone,
it.
Yeah. This step away from kind of normative femininity angers a lot of the usual suspects sort of around her. It's also a funny instance of product placement, right? This is right up there with Eleanor Glynn stepping into the movie to be like, here is my article. It's like, Vidal Sassoon. I got this haircut from Vidal Sassoon. Also, if you watch the credits at the start of the film, we credit Vidal Sassoon for this hair. You should get your haircut by Vidal Sassoon. It will anger the Satanists in your life. They then proceed to just like make her look awful. Like they hollow her out, huge bags under her eyes. She gets pastier and pastier. She's like gray and pallid. I think they must have upped the size of her costuming so that like she looks proportionately smaller. She's certainly made to look ever sort of frailer. And it's really, you know, by the time she's sort of hosting a party and having her friends around and stuff, and that kind of breaking point, the point where she's gonna like go back to Dr. Hill and try and kind of make her first flight from this whole thing. Yeah, she looks like death.
Of course, when suddenly the pain evaporates and she starts to feel better, like all pregnant people, she just goes, that's grand so, and she moves on. Because ultimately there is nothing else you can do.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's a train you're on. You gotta stay there till you get off at the final station. Whatever shit you endure in month one, if it doesn't last, that's great.
Yeah.
It is that surreal edge to the film where she is quite detached, appearing from reality. And I think that comes from that self-absorption at the beginning where she's barely holding it together. She doesn't have time to really engage with the world. And then when she feels better, she's just so relieved that she doesn't question anything. She's like, well, thank fuck for that. And of course, it's her first pregnancy. So she is in that position that anyone who does it for the first time is like, I have no idea. None.
Yeah.
Never did it before. You know? I mean, I always think that apart from the parasite thing, pregnancy is like being handed a bomb and some bombs will detonate and some will not. And nobody knows. Like, it is the wildest, most unpredictable, fucked up thing that people do without admitting that it's wild and crazy.
Well, and as this film makes pretty clear, sort of often for the wrong or like insufficient reasons, right? So Rosemary from the outset clearly wants a child, like, and it's clearer in the source material, I think, that like she really, you know, wants to be a mother. Her husband is more... Who's such a piece of shit. Jesus Christ, he is just the most self-absorbed fucking asshole. And it's John Cassavetes, who, you know, goes on to be an amazing filmmaker and in his own right, and his great performance. But, like, he plays self-absorption, that manipulative self-absorption that just about manages to, like, perform contrition or empathy at just the right moments to kind of keep stringing the other party along. Like, it's very shrewdly written and very shrewdly performed, but God, he is an absolute cunt. You'll be wishing him dead by the end of the film.
And even at the end, he just kind of looks a bit sheepish, you know.
Well,
that's the most he can manage.
There is someone I was watching with, it sort of drew attention to, one of the most chilling lines in the film is his, where he at the very end, again trying to sort of half be contrite, he's like, look, Ro, they told me that you wouldn't be hurt, and you haven't been, really.
Yeah.
And it's,
oh yeah,
like, in terms of this abuser mindset of like, yeah, but like, this isn't actually harm that you've been done, right? You know, we never hit you. We never X, Y, or Z. You know, you've only been psychologically tortured in all the ways that you have been through this, right? Again, something that the film acknowledges and addresses sort of pretty head on. One of the things that tips Rosemary off to something having been weird about the night of the conception, she eats this drug chocolate mousse, but she doesn't finish it because she detects that something's wrong with it, so she scoops a lot of it into her napkin. So she's not actually completely out cold. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a chilling moment where she's like, oh, Jesus Christ, this is actually happening to camera. Which feels almost to kind of confirm for the audience, like, no, this is really happening. I promise, this is actually happening. But she wakes up with, like, scratches and lacerations on her skin. And her husband sort of, you know, laughs it off as like, oh, sorry, yeah, like, I, you know, had a hangnail and, like, well, you know, I didn't want to miss baby night. So just, like, offhandedly confesses to marital rape, which obviously, you know, was not and would not be for a distressingly long time criminalized. But, you know, Rosemary does not take that well. And the film, I think, invites us to be like, no, you don't have sex with someone who's unconscious. That's not a thing you do.
Yeah, that was really... And like, he's just standing there brushing his teeth and he's like, oh, I guess I just got carried away. And you're like, oh, like, my fucking
die,
God.
Die in a fucking fire, you absolute piece of shit.
And also, of course, like, even... It's so suspicious. One of the things that makes it a good suspense thriller is the way that he knows in great detail about her cycle and her fertility window. Mm. Like mostly it's the person whose body it is the only one who's like, right, I have the dates. Whereas he's like, it's now. And that is weird.
Given, certainly for the rest of his characterization, he's so glib and offhand and disinterested with everything and with conception. But yeah, the fact that he's like, no, this is... the night to do it. It's also, I mean, a sociological reality that we have to confront as well, and I don't know to what extent it consciously informed the filmmaking, is obviously that intimate partner abuse is most likely to occur during pregnancy, right? Like, that is when it is often triggered and something around which it sort of centers because of all the, you know, dislocations it can potentially precipitate, keeping from someone from their sort of ordinary networks and all the things you might imagine that mean that that is a moment when it is both opportune for and a catalyst to an abusive person to be abusive. And so it's a quieter component of the film, but the portrait of him as, like, abuser is...
I mean, making someone pregnant is also a way to control them in a way that's made clear the way that Rosemary disintegrates physically. And in a way, partly psychologically, you know, she just turns inward and loses all contact with everybody. And that's something that abusers can exploit. Therefore, you know, getting someone pregnant is a good way to keep them barefoot and pregnant effectively. And I think that's part of it as well, which is like, God, I can't believe this is quite a feminist film.
It's a deeply anti-natal film, certainly, as well, right?
Very. Yeah, it is. It is very suspicious of the concept that pregnancy solves everything. Pregnancy makes everyone better, happy.
And that, like, fertility is the sort of prime good and sole function of women, and that everything should be sort of in deference to that bringing of children into the world and giving care to them. Like another chilling sort of moment is, like, Rosemary being brought over to sort of rock the cradle and, like, not being able to fully escape what the film seems to present as the snare of the maternal bond she feels for this thing. In the book, it's even more obvious, like, you know, the kid has horns and, like, cloven hooves and black eyes. And it's like, but still Rosemary is kind of like, oh, you know. The film's a bit more ambivalent about that. For my money, it was a very chilling moment of like, oh, no, there is a place for you. We can... A revered place for you can be made in this completely fucked social order if you just acquiesce to maternity. Like, just be a mother in the way that we construe it, and yeah, you'll have a very comfortable life.
Ira Levin was worried that he was going to get in trouble because he was inverting the Marian story from Christianity. He's like, well, I mean, she's Rosemary for a start. Yeah. Roses are associated with Mary, and then she's Mary. Mm. And it's conception of the opposite to the Savior, the Antichrist.
Yeah, it's far from immaculate, put it that way.
Yeah, it's everything. It's the reverse of everything. And I think that's really, it's a really interesting comment on what maternity is doing within the Christian tradition.
And especially within the kind of the Catholic Mariological version of that. And yeah, the kind of sanctification of a certain quite narrow vision of maternity. 100%. But yeah, so just to get around to like things that are likely to have angered the Irish censor, you've got everything from kind of like just basic stuff like, you know, there's nudity and sex, yes, and quite heavily signaled sex. You know, the couple, whenever they move in and the flat's completely bare, they like strip off and, you know, they're going to go at it on the that bare exposed hardwood floor, which seems like a recipe for splinters, but, you know, have at.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, ooh, that feels painful. But okay, you do you.
Also, John, like, Cassavetes takes off his jeans like a man who's never worn trousers before. Like, it's really inelegant.
His legs are, like, flapping. Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay.
Can you not take your clothes off?
Which is, it's a scene that seems intended to tell us that, like, oh, yeah, you know, like, whatever other tensions there are in the relationship, like, they're still into each other. But it doesn't read that way.
It does not feel like that. It feels a bit business-like.
Mm. I guess, like, which actually maybe that is the point as well. It is meant to feel a little mechanical. But yeah, so there's that. There's also just quite explicit sort of references to elements of pregnancy. I mean, we know the Irish censor didn't like pregnancy full stop, and that like people being pregnant on screen was a source of concern in decades prior to this one. But also things like, you know, she's expected to like express milk and pump. And you see the breast pump and you see the milk even after the notional stillbirth. And it's one of the things that tips her off is obviously the milk's being kept and kept kind of pure for the...
Fresh.
For the baby. But, you know, there's stuff like that. I think just the kind of acknowledgement. There's a direct reference to abortion. You know, she says, I won't have an abortion. If ever there was a film where you're have an abortion. please have an abortion.
Yeah.
And then there's all the Satanism and...
All of it. And there's suicide, there's drugs, because she's drugged with these, either both what look like standard pharmaceutical drugs and pills, and then these other
concoctions,
herbal concoctions. Yeah, there's coercive control. Like, yeah, it's full of stuff. So, like, it is banned when it comes first to the censor. He bans it. It goes to the appeals board, but it's this weird thing, you know, where they change over every 5 years. Mm. They have to have a new board. So the old board didn't get round to looking at it. So they kind of put it on file for the next board to come in. And nothing seems to have happened. There's no documentation about what happened next. So it's effectively banned by sort of falling through the cracks, I think.
Yeah.
And then it comes around again in 1977, and it's viewed again. It must be resubmitted, and it's viewed by the censor, and he's like, no, that's it. So, and that decision wasn't appealed. So I don't know if it's actually legal in Ireland yet. Has
really?
It been ever resubmitted? Well, like, the distributors have to go and like make the effort to fill in the form, pay the money and say, please, can you look at it again? And maybe they just, after a while, sort of don't bother. I don't know. They would have cut quite significant sections, I suspect, if it had been passed.
What I was going to say is, yeah, if you imagine what this film would be like shorn of the kind of offending elements, it does just become a film about a woman having an unhappy pregnancy. Like, it's just, you know, you wouldn't certainly get the ritual, you wouldn't get the kind of dream sequences, you wouldn't get the Satanism. So it's just like, God, Mia Farrow's having a quarrel time of it with this baby.
And those neighbours, they're a bit kind of in your face, aren't they? Like, oh, they're a bit OTT, you know, but they seem nice. It would just be kind of... I think the Satanism stuff would be so much in the background that you would have to work quite hard to see that as instead of being the main text, it would be the subtext.
Yeah.
So I take it we would recommend watching this then.
Yeah. I mean, again, with due caveats about the nature of the content and the tainted tree from which it sort of aesthetically derives. Yeah, this was, along with... The Graduate, like, this did really give a... And I think the dream sequences really reminded me of The Graduate in a weird sort of way.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. Another film that feels like it's sort of extending the vocabulary of American cinema to kind of accommodate how strange and fucked kind of middle-class American life is in sort of interesting ways. But yeah, no, I was really, as both a kind of horror fan and, you know, cinephile, like I was like, oh yeah, this is really good. I understand why this became such a touchstone.
As a not horror fan, and if you are scared of horror, you can still watch it and find it creepy without, you know, scaring the shite out of you, because it worked for me. So I'm a good barometer of, you know, easily scared cinema watcher.
There are no jump scares in it either.
No.
Which is a rare achievement in a in a horror.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.